Good morning. You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
Support for CKUW is provided by Organic Planet, Winnipeg's only worker-owned organic grocery and vegan deli, located at 877 Westminster Avenue, serving Wolseley and Winnipeg for over 30 years.
What do you read, my lord?
Words.
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 Good morning. I'm Susan Hubert, and this is Bookworm on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, the show where I talk mainly about books that I have reviewed, I interview authors, and sometimes just talk about the books. But either way, this is a chance for you to find out more about what's available in the book world.
Good morning and welcome to the show for Tuesday, November 25th, 2025. I hope you had a good week. And I'll start with a little bit of news now, and then I'll be talking about probably two books later on. So from CBC News, the federal and Alberta governments have reached a memorandum of understanding over specific special exemptions from federal environmental laws, and the agreement gives support to a new pipeline to the BC coast. Prime Minister Mark Carney and Alberta Premier Danielle Smith plan to announce the deal formally at a news conference on Thursday. The deal includes a requirement for Alberta to adopt a stricter industrial carbon pricing system. Then in international news, according to Global News, the Haile Gubi volcano in the Afar region of Ethiopia has erupted for the first time in almost 12,000 years, sending smoke 14 kilometers into the air and over the Red Sea, according to scientists. Although no one was injured by the eruption, many villages were covered in ash, making it difficult for animals to find food. By yesterday afternoon, smoke from the volcano was moving in the direction of China. And tourists and guides in a village near the Danakil Desert, which is a tourist attraction, were stranded there because of the ash. So that's today's news. And then in weather, according to the weather from the Winnipeg Richardson International Airport, it's currently minus 3 degrees and partly cloudy, or it's cloudy. Then for today, Tuesday, November 25th, the forecast is -1 with a 30% chance of snow. Then tonight, -7 with a 30% chance of snow. Then for Wednesday, November 26th, -4 degrees with a mix of sun and cloud, and overnight, -12 with cloudy periods. Then for Thursday, November 27th, -6 degrees with a mix of sun and cloud, then overnight, -14 with cloudy periods. For Friday, November 28th, -7 degrees with a mix of sun and cloud, then overnight, -13 with cloudy periods. For Saturday, November 29th, -8 degrees with a mix of sun and cloud, and then overnight, really cold, -20 with cloudy periods. Then for Sunday, November 30th, -14 degrees with a mix of sun and cloud, then overnight, -18 with cloudy periods. So we might be getting back to normal temperatures for this time of the year. And it's time now for CKUW's event guide. From concert and club listings to community announcements, we help you keep in touch with what's going on in Winnipeg. For the first event, there are readings of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens with Ron Robinson on December 18th, 19th, and a matinee on December 21st, and Richard Hurst will be reading on December 17th, 20th, and 21st. The evenings are at 7:30 p.m. and the matinee is at 1 p.m. The pricing for evenings is $30 general, $25 for members, and matinee $60 adults and $55 for children, and $55 for member adults, $50 for member children. So that's with Ron Robinson, who's a volunteer here as well, and Richard Hurst, who is an actor who has been at on various stages in the city and elsewhere. Then for another event, there is a pierogi supper at the Holy Family Ukrainian Catholic Church at 1001 Grant Avenue on Friday, November 28th, that's this Friday, from 5 to 7 p.m. A regular plate with six pierogies is $10, and a large plate with 10 pierogies is $15. And the plates include sour cream, fried onions, dessert, and a beverage, which is tea, coffee, or juice. And you can also buy pierogi and pierogies for $8 a dozen, or cabbage rolls, meatless cabbage rolls, for $12 a dozen. And it has a note that this is the last pierogi supper before Christmas and for the year. So those are a few of the events listed in the guide. If you'd like to have your event listed as well, please drop by CQUW, email us at cqw.winnipeg.ca, or call 204-786-9782. So now for one of the books that I'd like to talk about, I had a last-minute change in my plan yesterday since I heard that, or I read that the author Rosalie Tennyson was in an accident in Osborne Village on Friday, and she died over the weekend of her injuries. So I've talked about her book before, but I thought it would be good to talk about it again. So this is Naomi's Houses, a memoir by Rosalie I. Tennyson. And that's T-E-N-N-I-S-O-N. And that's published by Heritage House, and it's 288 pages. So here's my review. Every day we make choices, from minor ones that could be forgotten within minutes to life-changing ones that can affect generations. In Naomi's House is a memoir, Rosalie I. Tennyson shows the positive and negative effects the choices can have on the future of an entire family, as seen through the Manitoba houses where her family members lived. Tennyson was an award-winning agricultural journalist who has written for rural weekly newspapers and agricultural trade magazines, as well as working with a small town radio station. She lived in Winnipeg until, as I mentioned, she was struck by a vehicle in Winnipeg on Friday, November 21st, and later died of her injuries. Naomi's Houses begins with a prologue explaining the situation in which Tennyson's parents found themselves, constantly on the edge of dire poverty, juggling their family's needs with what they could afford. Her father, Tennyson explains, often had to choose between two bad options, looking for the least harmful one. The houses where the family lived became symbols of these choices. The family farmhouse was the first place Tennyson herself lived, together with her parents and two siblings. With no money to hire farm help, the family worked hard, but also found shelter in their home and each other, at least until the unexpected death of Tennyson's father. Meanwhile, her parents' grandparents' home, which she called Wildwood, was a place where the family could go for relief from the struggles of daily life, although this life at this house also had its challenges. The loss of her father meant a diminished income for Tennyson's family, forcing them to move to a house that the author calls the hovel. Life in the new surroundings was hard, but Tennyson's mother did what she could to make the house a home and to get the family onto a better financial footing. When the author and her two siblings were able to start earning some money through babysitting and other odd jobs, the family's financial situation eased somewhat. Further change came when Tennyson's mother remarried and moved to a house the author calls the Haunted Acres. The marriage was not successful despite the second husband's wealth, and Tennyson was relieved when the relationship ended so that she and her mother could get away. The book's final chapter includes reflections on the role of Wildwood in the author's life, as well as an epilogue describing the author's own search for housing that could help to bring out the best in her. Naomi's Houses is a gripping story with many elements readers will recognize and understand, even if they have not had the same experiences. Although some may not identify with the author's use of houses as the anchor for the memoir, the technique helps to move the story along in a structured way. One potentially confusing aspect of this literary device is that it can be difficult to reconcile Tennyson's changing perspectives on the homes as she grew into adulthood. In general... Excuse me. In general, however, it works quite well. Naomi's Houses is a thought-provoking story about the struggles and triumphs of a Manitoba family. So that's Naomi's Houses by Rosalie Tennyson, TENNISON, and that's Heritage House, and it's 288 pages. So now maybe I'll play a little bit of music and then get on to the next review. So this is from an album called Rostropovich Plays Shostakovich. Kind of rhyming there. And this is part of Concerto for Cello and Orchestra No. 1 in E-flat major by the Czech Philharmonic Orchestra. So I hope you'll enjoy it. Thank you. So that was part of Concerto for Cello and Orchestra, number 1 in E-flat major by Dmitri Shostakovich. And that was from the album Rostropovich Play Shostakovich. A little bit of a tongue twister. But I hope you enjoyed that. And before the break, if you were listening earlier, you might remember that I was talking about a book by Rosalie Tennyson. And she was killed in an accident, or died as a result of an accident, this past weekend. And so I thought it might be interesting to have a different perspective on car accidents. And this is called Car Crash, A Memoir of the Aftermath by Lek Blaine, B-L-A-I-N-E. And that's Greystone Books, and it's 219 pages. Sometimes a brief moment can change the course of a person's life. For Lek Blaine, that moment was on a Saturday night in May 2009, when he and several of his friends were in a devastating car crash that killed several of the other passengers but left the author physically unscathed. Car Crash, A Memoir of the Aftermath, describes the emotional and psychological toll that the accident took on the author as he tried to work through his survivor's guilt, giving readers an inside look at how accidents can affect the people who experience them. In 2009, Lek Blaine was in the front seat, passenger seat, of a heavily loaded car which crashed head-on into another vehicle. Some of his friends died or were badly injured, leaving Blaine to contemplate his escape from harm and how the experience affected his life. The book relates the story of the months following the accident as the author tries to return to his normal life while still working through the consequences of the trauma that he had experienced. The book relates both what happened in the aftermath of the accident and how the author and his surviving friends and relatives dealt with it. With the driver of the car facing a criminal trial over the deaths of three of the passengers, the author alternates between descriptions of his quest to live a normal life and his own attempts to make sense of being alive and healthy, while several of his friends died or were facing life-altering injuries. Even with something as traumatic as a deadly accident, life continues, as the author noted. Between reflections on the aftermath of the accident, Blaine describes his life as a teenager, trying to make sense of the world, as most teenagers need to do. Going out with friends, trying to maintain a good relationship with his girlfriend, and still attending school are some of the activities he describes. Meanwhile, he visits the parents of the victims of the car crash, sharing in their grief at the loss of their sons. Lek Blaine's descriptions of his life before and after the accident are a vivid account of the life of an Australian teenager. Although the author occasionally seems to lose track of the main theme of the book, dealing with trauma, he manages to regain some of that focus in the second half of the book. Many people who have had similar experiences of having to rediscover life after an accident will identify with what he's talking about, and Blaine brings his own unique perspective to the story. Other than a few colloquial Australian words and expressions, Car Crash is easy to read, and the story the author tells is compelling. For people trying to deal with their own difficulties, or for anyone interested in seeing how someone can rebuild a life after a traumatic event, Car Crash is a good choice. About the author, Lek Blaine is an Australian writer and journalist originally from Toowoomba, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but now living in Sydney. His writing has been published in many peer articles, including The Guardian, The Monthly, The Best Australian Essays, and others. His memoir gives readers valuable insights into the motivations behind his life's work. So that book is Car Crash, A Memoir of the Aftermath by Lech Blaine. That's L-E-C-H, then B-L-A-I-N-E, and that's published by Greystone Books and is 219 pages. And then for anyone who was listening earlier, I talked about Naomi's House as a Memoir by Rosalie I. Tennyson, which is published by Heritage House and is 288 pages. And one of the reasons why I chose this book for today, as I mentioned earlier, is that the author, Rosalie Tennyson, was in an accident on Friday in Osborne Village or on Osborne Street somewhere and later died of her injuries. So it's sad to know that she won't be writing anymore, but at least we have this memoir and her other writing as a memorial to her. And then the other book deals with how to deal with traumatic experiences. So then these are two of the books that I thought would be interesting to talk about for today. And next week I'll be back to talk about two other books. And maybe for now I'll also play a little bit of an interview by, or I'll maybe play a little bit of an interview that I had with Evelyn Forget about poverty and other issues that she dealt with in one of her book launches. So here's something by Evelyn Forget. This is Susan Hubert for CQW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, and can I get you to introduce yourself?
My name is Evelyn Forget. I'm a health economist at the University of Manitoba.
We were just at your book launch of Basic Income for Canadians. Can you give the main idea behind your book?
Well, I think the book attempts to be an even-handed consideration of the evidence for and against a basic income in Canada. I've managed to convince myself that a basic income in Canada is a good idea. It's feasible, it's affordable, and I think it's something that would improve the society that we live in.
You talked about some of the objections that people have to basic income, but also many of the benefits that there would be. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I think that there are a number of benefits. I mean, I think that one of the real limitations of our current system is that basic social assistance, as offered by the provinces, is insufficient and administered in a way that doesn't allow people to live with dignity. So I think that a basic income replacing that kind of a system would be a very positive thing. And a second thing that we also need to recognize is that the job market is changing pretty dramatically. As good blue-collar jobs are being replaced by less remunerative, lower-paying, less secure service sector jobs, I think we recognize more and more that the existing suite of income support programs that we have in place really doesn't fill all of the gaps, and a basic income would help to do that.
And you also talked about two basic income projects, the one in Dauphin, which had a lot of evidence that came out of it, and the one in Ontario, which basically ended before much evidence could come out. Could you talk a little bit about those?
Sure. I really first began working on the idea of basic income by going back and looking at the MINCOM project that ran in Manitoba. It actually ran in the city of Winnipeg, in Dauphin, and in a couple of little towns, although my work tended to focus on Dauphin. The purpose of that early experiment, it was conducted during the 1970s. The purpose of that experiment was to find out whether people reduce their commitment to work if they're offered a basic income. And shortly after the experiment ended, Wayne Simpson and Derek Hum did the analysis of the labor market outcomes and showed that for most people there's very little reduction in work effort. But there were two groups that reduced the number of hours they worked. First of all, married women reduced their work hours, and young unattached males, who turned out to be boys in high school, reduced the number of hours they worked rather dramatically. I went back and looked at that data, and I tried to answer questions about health and quality of life. And I discovered that people who received a basic income as compared to very similar people of the same age and sex and living in similar kinds of places, earning the same amount of money, people who received a basic income were 8.5% fewer hospitalizations, had 8.5% fewer hospitalizations than the control group. They visited their family doctors less often, and when I looked a little bit more closely to find out why they were using the healthcare system less often, mental health issues showed up as a really key factor. So they were going to the doctor less often, complaining about anxiety and depression and so on. That led me into consideration of a lot of other issues related to basic income, and I was involved in the introduction of the Ontario Basic Income Experiment a couple of years ago. That was introduced by the former Liberal government, and it was a much broader experiment. It intended to look at a whole range of things like child development, physical and mental health, work effort, and so on.
So that was a little bit of my interview with Evelyn Forger in her book about basic income for Canadians. And we're coming to the end of the show for today of Bookworm, but stay tuned for Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. And thanks for listening.
Support for CKUW is provided by the West End Cultural Center, your friendly local arts nonprofit, bringing you live music, community, and connection since 1987. Roll around in the shadows like a cat in the light, I'm scared of everyone.
What do you read, my lord?
Words. Words.
Words.
This is the end of Bookworm on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg for today, and I hope that you have been inspired to pick up a new book to read. Be sure to tune in next week for more discussions about books, and thanks for listening.
CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. Listener-driven radio.
The Wrench is the Winnipeg Repair Education and Cycling Hub. Since 2010, The Wrench has used discarded bike parts collected from Winnipeg's 4R sites to educate our community in bike mechanics and keep us all on our bikes through access to bikes and bike repair. We work with dozens of schools throughout Winnipeg to offer Earn a Bike, an 8-week program for teens to learn to rebuild a bike from scratch and take it home with them at the end of program completion. Are you a teacher who wants to bring Earn a Bike to your school? Get in touch. Check out thewrench.ca and look for Earn a Bike. We can't wait to work with you.